The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is my mother, author Ann Werner. We're going to be talking about her latest book, The Adepts, which is the third in a trilogy. The first was The Melt, the second, The Augurs, and it's about a global pandemic. She started writing it in 2016. I don't know, is she psychic? You're going to have to decide. We're going to talk about her books, the DNC, Kamala, Tim, all the good stuff, some of the crappy stuff, but we're going to have fun. But before we do, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now, please enjoy my conversation with author Ann Werner. Welcome back to the show, Ann, Mom.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
That's what I call you all the time, Ann, Mom.
I know. That's right.
Oh, my
it's
God.
It's Ann, Mom. It's even when you send me a Christmas card, it's to Ann, Mom at the address.
Well, you know, we've got a lot to cover because you've written another book, a third book in a series. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. And then we're going to talk about all the cool and awesome stuff. There's some shitty stuff that we're unfortunately going to have to cover because it's like, it seems like talking about MAGA world now is just so depressing. But we will get to all of that in a second. First, we're going to talk about your book. So
okay.
I want to just preface this with this. Like I said, it's a trilogy. It started with The Melt, and the second book was The Augurs. This is the third book called The Adepts. And The Melt, you started writing, it was about a global pandemic, and you started writing this in 2016. So
yes.
I just, you know, we talked about this the last time you were on, but I just want you to kind of go over this because it's like you're psychic. And it's like you weirdly, oddly predicted this strange pandemic. And so before we get into all of the, you know, what the book is about and all that, just like what inspired you to do it?
To be honest, you know how I am. I like to do things that scare me.
Yeah.
And so I decided I wanted to write a series because that scared the hell out of me. Because every time I start writing a book, I always think, I don't know if I'm going to be able to finish it. I don't know if it's going to be any good. And they all scare me.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, I'm going to do a triple scare. And I'm going to write three books in a series. So the idea just kind of floated into my mind. And at first it was set in Northern California because that's where I was at the time. But I also had my place up for sale. Which is why the locale changed. One of the reasons, because I had my people trying to escape from the plague by going out in a boat on the ocean, and then I realized I don't know a damn thing about boats on the ocean, and I have no one I can ask about it. And, you know, it wouldn't be very realistic. So, but I just, I started and I laid the groundwork for it, and then I had this cross-country move. And so then it was interrupted with the house and all that stuff, and but it kind of, that's where I kind of got settled in my mind mm-hmm. about it. And it was interesting because it never really, I never envisioned it as having a psychic aspect, although a lot of my books do.
Yeah.
And I think that's because everybody is a little bit psychic. And I've had experiences
yeah.
That blew my mind, quite frankly. I've had psychic experiences, and I think everybody does every once in a while, but we brush them off.
Yeah.
Like I brushed mine off, you know, as just, oh, it's just this, or it's just that, or it's a coincidence, or blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But in the first book, one of my main characters, to escape from the plague, my two main characters had just purchased the house, and there was a bomb shelter. So I had them, you know, looking at the house and everything. And when they went to the bomb shelter, my female lead character had this weird feeling. And that's kind of where it came from.
Yeah.
And so when I went into the second book, I developed the psychic aspect. These were emerging abilities among these people who had formed a settlement. Mm-hmm. And they didn't really know what to make of what was happening. So the second book dealt with that. And the second book also dealt with an incursion from forces that were diametrically opposed to the kind of world that these people were struggling to establish after 95% of the world's population was gone. So, I mean, that's really where it came from. And years ago, one of my favorite authors has always been Stephen King. And years ago, he wrote a book called On Writing. And one of the things that really stuck out with me, because a lot of people, they outline, they do this, they do that. I can't write an outline because I never know what's going to happen. I never know how my books are going to end. I never know until I get there. I start getting an idea while I'm writing the book, but I never really know where it's going to end until I'm finished. So in his book On Writing, Stephen King said that he just starts out with a what if, mm-hmm. and that's what I start out with every time. What if this happened? What if that happened? What if you were in this situation? And then just let it happen organically. So it took me a lot longer. Usually it would take me like a year to write a book, but this time it took me 8 years to write three, but that's because I had a cross-country move,
right.
And then I had the delightful time during the pandemic of having two hip replacements, and then I, as you well know, because you've been my nurse every time, I had a right knee replacement
last
year.
That was fun. Just have to kind of interrupt with that, because it was during Christmas time, and
mm-hmm.
it was like, we were bummed because we knew, well, first of all, you thought maybe in 2 weeks you would be okay. Wrong. So we were kind of hoping to, you know, that you would be a little bit, but you weren't. It took a long time. It takes like 6 weeks. Anyway, it's like during that time, my car battery my car battery just died, but it went out. And then I had somebody come out to the house and they started it up again. And then I went back out to my car and it was dead. And then I used your car and then I forgot to close the hatch and then your battery fucking died. And then I was so scared because your sweet loving cat Jezzy, something was happening with her legs.
Yeah, her rear legs went out.
Yes, and thankfully though, because I was at this point I was a fucking mess. And we had to go to the vet and I was so scared. And you know, the vet was great because he was telling us that, you know, well, she might have this terrible thing or that terrible thing, and only an MRI that's $3,000 is gonna show us. But in the meantime, he gave her
prednisone.
And it helped. It like helped immediately.
Yeah, the next day. Yeah, so. But let's not forget when the dryer went out.
Yeah, and then there was like the smoke alarms or whatever was going off through the whole house. Or whatever alarms. It was effing crazy.
Yes,
I swear to God.
It was insane. And I did. I lost a lot of time writing. I couldn't. I was unable to sit for very long because you have to keep on moving when you have like replacement surgery. So it took me a long time, you know, to finish these three books. And I'm still, as we speak, the paperback isn't out yet, and waiting for my proof copy so your significant other, Mr. Bob Seska, can take a look and make sure that it all looks well. I'm getting that copy on Friday, and we'll bring it for him to see on Saturday. And, you know, I mean, he's been a great... I can't even tell you. I mean, he makes such great covers.
Yeah.
He works so well, and I'm just grateful for him.
He's just
and
a
I'm
good
grateful
guy.
For, you know, the people that have so far purchased the book. I've had some people who went, okay, all right, this sounds really good, and I'm going to buy the first book. And I've had a lot of people that have purchased all three at one time, and then I've had people who have been very patiently waiting for the Adepts to come out. So,
yeah, and I'm just going to say, obviously, I've read them all. I always read them all to give you my feedback and look for mistakes or whatever. And obviously, I like the whole thing. I like your writing anyway. I mean, I always have favorites of books that you've written.
And, and speaking of your favorites, and we all know your favorite is Crazy.
Yes, it is.
I have that right now for 99 cents. It's not going to be up for very long, but it's on, just like The Adepts and all the other books, it's up on Amazon.
Okay.
It is also in Barnes & Noble. It is also in Kobo and in Apple Books. And all you really have to do is you go to any one of those venues, and this is what I just love to do. You put in the title, Crazy, and then after that you write my name, Ann Werner, W-E-R-N-E-R. So it just says Crazy Ann Werner, and there the book will pop up, and it kind of is a description of moi.
Well, and it's A-N-N, just so you know. It's not A-N-N-E.
No E, and it's not Warner, it's Werner, W-E-R-N-E-R. So, you know, if you haven't read any of my books and you're kind of afraid of going and putting your toe in to somebody that you've never read before, 99 cents, man, for Kimberly's favorite book.
And let me just tell you, Crazy is
an I highly recommend that you read my After the Apocalypse series, because I worked very hard on it, and I take things from just from really the headlines.
Yeah. Well, I just want to quickly say with Crazy, it's very, 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 very loosely based on me, and it's there's some humor in it, even though it's a thriller, a psychological thriller about a serial killer. So,
serial killer,
satanic serial killer. And the lead blonde, like I said, is loose. It's not about me really, but you know, you always take from real life. And that, so we're going to get to that in a second on how you take from real life in your series, but you did in Crazy. And I swear to God, that book is so much fun. I'm not going to give anything away, but like the humor, there's humor in the weird satanic parts. I mean, it's like, it's fucking awesome. And, you know, I always love whenever you're writing a book. I mean, okay, there was also a book that you were writing. And of course, the name Dreams and Nightmares. And you were writing about the lead guy who was really scary. And I was like,
Albert Crawford, I love him.
Yeah, I know. And I'm like, okay, you need to make him creepier. And I'm not going to say what the story is, but we have a family member who told a story about... it's disgusting and it's supposedly true, but it was a stepbrother of theirs who was in jail and did something really disgusting with his toenails. And so I said, you should put that story in. And it's so funny because you did, and everybody comments on it. So, it's so gross, but it's real. And she didn't imagine this was real. So anyway, but yeah, okay. Going back to the series. So you... And it's evident, you can tell, that you are taking like headlines of today and kind of inserting them into the story. And so just talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, I mean, you see so many things about right-wing preachers. Mm-hmm. And they're you know, they're up there beating their chest and give me money for Jesus and all that stuff. And then you find out that they're child molesters.
Right.
And you find out that they've done, that, you know, that they've cheated on their wives, that they've defrauded their parishioners, you know, all the nasty stuff that you see. So, I mean, I started it in the first book in The Melt with Reverend Carl Barker. Mm-hmm. He renamed himself. I can't even remember what his original name was because it was 8 years ago when I started writing him. But that's what I always do. I think in every author does that. You find somewhere there's a little kernel of truth, and then you go and you explode it.
Right.
And you build a whole narrative around it.
Yeah.
So, and in any kind of a book, you need some sort of, you know, tension between two opposing sides. Mm-hmm. And so you've got this one settlement that these people are striving to create, and all these different divergent people come together, and there aren't that very many because there aren't a lot left, but they slowly start trickling in. So you have these people that are from all walks of life. They go to a town that they call New Hope, but it's Harper's Ferry. And in the book, it tells you that it was Harper's Ferry, but they right. rename it because it's a new world. And then you have the people who are full of hate, mm-hmm. and they mix their hate with religion. And this is a very familiar thing. And this is why I no longer post when I release a book. I won't put it on Twitter because I know what I'll get. I'll get drive-bys, people mm-hmm. who have not read the book, and then they'll just give a bad review. And my favorite was in The Melt. One of the reviews was the one, I knew the first time, in the first three pages, that this woman was liberal and all she does is tweet. Well, in the first more than three pages, okay, it was the wolves were hungry, okay, you're in the the northern Mongolian steppe, yeah. and then it takes you to the Duka, a tribe of reindeer hunters. Boy, that really says liberal
to
me.
So liberal. Oh, my God.
But that's what they do.
I know.
So I never even put it up, which is a shame because, I have, yeah. I'm not hugely popular, but I got over 12,000 Twitter followers, but a lot of them, are just waiting to pounce
on
me.
And
so I just don't put anything up there anymore. I am on BookBub. .com, and you can find me on bookbub.com, and it's got all my other titles, some of which I have done with you.
Yes.
The People Next Door, not The People Next Door, what am I talking about? The Virgin Diaries and Ain't No Sunshine Men.
Reveal the Pain of Heartbreak.
Yeah.
Yeah, just in case for those of you who don't know, Virgin Diaries was about first-time sexual experiences, and basically we just wanted to capture not so much the physical aspect, but the emotional aspect. And when we would ask people, what was your first time like, people will initially just say, oh, it was so boring. But there was a questionnaire that I gave them with 25 different questions, and it started with, like, did you hear rumors about it? What did your friends tell you? What did you expect? Did your parents talk to you about it? And so it's much more than just, we were in the back of a car and this happened and that happened. It's more the emotional side of it. And of course,
yeah,
there's physical.
There is
sex in it, obviously.
It's a book about sex, but it's not about sex.
Right. It's the emotional, the whole thing, because everybody, I remember being a kid and, I had, as you well know, I was a little prude and, I was like afraid of everything sexual, but this is a world where, everybody's sexual. You see it in the movies, you hear it in songs. And so kids are curious about it. And, we were sitting, unfortunately, we were both stupid and we were smoking, but we were sitting in your garage and we were smoking. And I said something like, wouldn't it be cool to see a documentary about first time sex? And then you're like, actually, I think it would be better to be a book because people would feel more comfortable talking about it and, they could be anonymous or whatever. And so that's what we did. We got anonymous stories and we did try at the time. We were not on, there was no Facebook. And so we were getting our stories literally from the volunteer section in Craigslist. So,
yeah.
And people would ask us, how do you know if these stories are real? Well, they would, there was a few we rejected because we could tell they were bullshit and embellished. But most of the time you could just tell by the way that they wrote it. It was genuine and it was coming from the heart. And there were only a few stories that we rejected. And then, okay, now the funny thing is, we did Ain't No Sunshine, and the reason that book came about was because I was like desperate to not have to work a regular job, and I thought I'm gonna write a viral bestseller. And my friend said to me, you should do a book talking to men about heartbreak because, people think men just have this easy time. And I think it's harder for men. And so we did. Now, obviously, this book did not become a bestseller and it did not prevent me from the things that I wanted to prevent me from. But still, it was such an interesting perspective because these men, because they're anonymous, were able to talk about stuff. And today I wrote on Twitter because, and we'll get to this in a minute, but toxic or masculinity is men crying tears of joy because they love someone. Toxic masculinity is men, or mocking men who publicly cry those tears of joy. And so these men had the opportunity to be anonymous, and they could talk about how painful and how difficult it was to experience a broken heart, not just a breakup, but could be a divorce, it could be death. We had all kinds of different reasons why people couldn't, or, you know, the unrequited love or whatever it was. But anyway, so those are the two that we did together. And yes, so you can find it on BookBub, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, I guess everywhere where you sell
Kobo,
books. Right?
Kobo, Apple Books. Well, no, those two books, you can get the paperbacks just about anywhere you buy books.
Okay.
The Virgin Diaries and Ain't No Sunshine. Those I have left up on the Kindle program, all right? So you can, I can't even remember how it works. I know that people can borrow that book and they can read it.
Okay.
And without actually buying it. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. I don't know how it works anymore.
Well, we don't have to. Well, I'm sure that people
can. But I do know
can...
that, like, right now, I check and I can see that who's been reading what. There are sales, and then there's the thing they have a thing where you can read books for free. You have, you know, you pay for it.
Yeah.
But then you can read any book for free. It's their program. Right. All right. And I have to say that the Virgin Diaries and Ain't No Sunshine are always showing up on those things because people get to read them for free.
Right.
If they are enrolled in that particular reading program on Amazon.
Yeah.
So, they have always generated some interest. I mean, it's not like they fly off the shelf, but every single month I see that pages are read from both of those books.
Cool.
So, yeah, you know, and just, you know, they're anthologies is basically
right.
what they are. We really didn't contribute as far as writing the books. We, you know, you came up with the questions and we came up with a little foreword, but then the rest of it is just stories that people sent us.
Yeah.
And they're really kind of interesting. So, you know, but I like to have a big variety. I'm the kind of person who likes to read a variety of things. I'll read horror stories. I'll read love story. Well, no, I don't like bodice rippers, but I do like love stories. I like drama. I like police. I like to read.
Yeah.
As you know, I've always loved to read, which is why I write books. It took me until I was, I don't know, somewhere. Well, it took me till I was 50 years old, really, to do my first book, The People Next Door. But the first book I wrote, I still haven't done anything with it. It's downstairs in the closet.
Well,
but it was just, I just wanted to see if I could write a book.
Right.
And I could.
Yeah.
And it wasn't very good because I concentrated on finishing it rather than actually writing the story. Now I actually care about the story. So I try to fill out my characters and stuff. So, you know, I'm just hoping that people will just, you know, catch on and take a look at after the apocalypse. I mean, if you're into dystopian fiction, there are no monster trucks. It's not like a Mad Max kind of a thing. It's a real examination of society.
Yes. Yeah, and human psychology.
With characters that you can relate to.
Yeah, and human psychology. And it's, and I was going to say earlier, you know, I mean, I like the whole series, but I really, really, really love the third book. It's so good. And it's a little bit in part because of the psychic ability and, you know, my,
yeah.
And I'm going to switch over in a second to politics, but, you know, on my Patrons Only show, I like to talk about manifesting and, you know, I've talked about my psychic experiences and all of that, but I'm going to switch over. I find it very fascinating because number one, I'm going to talk about two things. Number one, I think it was last, I don't know, it was last year, it was a couple of times, Lorraine Devon Wilkie and I paired up to try to urge anybody, like, high profile. I had this idea of, like, you know, we're dealing with white supremacy, and it would be so good if we could have, like, a modern day Live Aid type of thing where you had music and it would appeal to all ages, including young people. And, you know, there would be stars and it would be entertaining. And last night while I was watching the DNC,
just like the DNC.
Exactly. And, but what really triggered that was what's his, Kenan Thompson from Saturday Night Live came out, and he had that Project 2025 book with him. And it was such a good, it was informative, but funny. And that's exactly what I was thinking. And I was, and not only was I thinking about, you know, this idea of a Live Aid thing, I've always been saying Democrats need to utilize Hollywood, utilize humor, because like back in the day when I was young, we had Schoolhouse Rock and that was fun, and just ways to teach people about what's going on that's entertaining. And, you know, it's funny because Jamie Harrison follows me, the head of the DNC. And I'm not saying he saw my tweet and said, hey, I'm going to do this, but perhaps he saw it and then it just like planted a little seed in his head because the DNC is like fucking on fire.
The Democrats have really figured out how to do it this time.
Yes. And then, you know, and then
we are finally on the offensive.
And then, okay, here's the other manifesting thing. I swear to God, I think we manifested the political version of Ted Lasso, which is Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, because that's Rebecca and Ted Lasso. I mean, it's like, oh my God, I was talking about it with Bob last night as we were falling asleep, and we were both like so excited after watching the DNC. It was like we were on cocaine and we couldn't fall asleep, and we were just like, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, I gotta go to sleep. But we were talking about, I'm like, I think this is like we manifested Ted Lasso. I think we did it. it's like because when we watched Ted Lasso, I mean, some of it was during, I don't exactly remember the years that it was on, but I mean, there were the Trump years, and even during, you know, the Biden years, we've had to deal with Trumpism and everything. And so Ted Lasso was always this like kind of beacon, always like this ideal version of who we are. And now we have these two people potentially running the country. And I really hope that we can get this done. And I think we will. But I want to ask you, did you watch all of the DNC last night?
I didn't see all of it, but I tuned in probably just around 8 o'clock.
Did you see Hakeem Jeffries?
Yes.
Oh, my God, he was so great.
Because when he first started, though, it was, I was sitting there and I was like facepalming, only because he sounded, when he first started, like an automaton almost.
Oh,
he was
right.
Reading what he was saying.
Yeah.
And he wasn't paying attention to the audience reaction. You could tell that it wasn't really his forte.
Right.
But then he kind of...
He found his groove.
I'll tell you what it reminded me of, is way back in the dark ages when both of us were in the acting biz, and we belonged to an acting studio. And we, as you know, we used to have to do scenes. And I did that one scene with Nigel Gibbs, who nobody knows that. Well, maybe some people out there know that name, but I can guarantee you if you don't know his name, you've seen him. Mm-hmm. And we were doing a scene from this play. And the week before the scene passed, we just crashed and burned. And you could feel it.
Yeah.
You know, you could feel it because we didn't hit that groove.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we came back the next week, all right, as soon as we started, we hit the groove.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost, I mean, I don't ski. I've never skied. But to me, I would imagine that the feeling that we got was when you are up on the slope and then you start down and everything is perfect,
mm-hmm.
and you're in this groove,
mm-hmm.
and he hit that groove.
Yes, he did, and he was
it
so fun.
It took him
fun.
A little while because at first it was just he was kind of flat, and I was thinking, come on, Hakeem, but then he found his groove.
He did, and it was so fun.
He got out some good ones.
Yes, and it's like I was watching Joy Reid afterwards, and she was like, his backup career was like a rap singer because she's like, he's so great. He's always going to, and she even did the rhymes. It was so cute.
Yeah.
She was rhyming about him rhyming.
That,
it was so fucking cute. And then, I mean, you know, both Hillary Clinton and Michelle Obama basically said, you know, can you feel it? Can you feel it? There's something happening. And really, there is something happening. And I definitely want to talk about this because I've talked about it before, but I'm not going to shut up about it. Because again, with my whole, you know, psychic manifesting all this stuff, I feel like on July 21st, I believe that was the day that Biden dropped out. You know, there was a quantum jump, and I never really even understood the term quantum jumping, even though I'm kind of into all that stuff. It was like, what does that mean? Well, this is what it is. It's literally like from a very short period of time, 1 second you've got, it's like, so if you won the lottery, right? From yeah. 1 second to the next, you're living in a completely different world. And so here we were, Joe Biden drops out. I called you and we both were feeling sick. We both felt so sick to our stomachs. And then it took 27 minutes and he endorsed Kamala, and then the quantum jump happened. It was like yeah. everything started to align.
It was instantaneous.
Yeah, it was like the money coming in.
It was instantaneous. It was really amazing. Yeah. I mean, it was really amazing.
It was so amazing because, I mean, the money was coming in. The endorsements were coming in. There was no flaw. Everything was executed personally, perfectly. And as we are moving through this right now, I feel like the momentum is building and there's just this energy that is, I think it's the exchange of energy from us to them, from us to them. And it's like we're feeding off of each other and it's getting more and more exciting. I will always say, you know, don't get complacent. I think the thing right now, you know, Bob Seska's thing is all don't get happy, but we're also seeing, you know, all gas, no brakes. We cannot yeah. take anything for granted. But I do believe, and I know you believe this too, that if we all vote, we're going to see a massive landslide.
Oh, we will. And I think what we also really need to do, everybody has to get on board. Everybody has to do their part.
Yes.
I volunteered. You know, I signed up with my local Democratic Party, and I checked off all these boxes, things that I could do. Yeah. There are some things that during the heat I couldn't do. I can't go stand in the sun
yeah.
when it's, you know, when we were having those horrible heat waves. But now that it's over, I'm waiting because you have to take a class where I am in order to register voters. You have mm-hmm. to get a certificate. But in the meantime, I volunteered. I'm writing 100 postcards. I don't have to go out until October 1st. Mm-hmm. And they are to North Carolina. And the one thing that I found, boy, I'm glad I have until October 1st, because writing the same thing yeah. over yeah. and over and over again, I can do 5 postcards at a time, and then my hand turns into a claw.
Yeah.
So, and my writing becomes absolutely illegible. So, you know, I'm trying to do, you know, like 5 of them a day. So I make sure that I'll have everything ready, because I know there are days I'm not going to be able to do it. But I said, you know, and then, but I think the next thing I'll do is I'll go knock on doors. I think that would be easier than doing the postcards, which I thought would be kind of simple, but no, it isn't, because I have arthritis in my hand, and after a while, it really does. It looks like chicken scratch. But so I'm very careful because I want it legible, because I want to write to these North Carolina voters, because we got a shot at North Carolina.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole deal with the North Carolina postcards is about the governorship. And they figure if they can capture the governor's house like they did before mm-hmm. and then convince people just to vote the entire ballot Democrat, and this is what you ask, in you know, it's the ask in my postcard, that we can win the presidency in North Carolina too.
Oh my God,
it's
so great.
It's one of those states. It's like teetering on the edge,
yeah.
and you know, they have a lunatic down there running yeah. for governor.
Yes, he
is. His name is Mark Robinson,
yeah.
and he wants to ban abortion, and he wants to slash public school funding, and mm-hmm. you know, he's all into culture wars and all that sort of thing. So I think if everybody just hands on deck, just does one thing. Just one thing.
Yeah, one extra thing aside from voting, yeah.
That's it. Just one extra thing aside from voting. I think it's so important. Make phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've done all of this. You know, I did it when I lived in Arizona. I was with Democrats of the Verde Valley. I was the secretary of that organization. And, I mean, I did all of it. You know, I made phone calls. I wrote postcards. I knocked on doors. And in Arizona, that can be a dangerous thing because yeah. I knocked on the wrong door, man. They give you addresses, okay, but I guess whoever had lived there was no longer a Democrat where they'd moved. And the man that opened the door, he did not like, because it was back when Howard Dean was running.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't like that I was there talking about Howard Dean. And he went and got his rifle and chased me off of his property. And it's
wow.
like, dude, you know. If
those
you don't
right
vote for
wingers.
Howard, that's cool, but don't shoot me.
Those right wingers are so filled with family values, aren't they?
It's just, it's really, you know, I mean, it's just amazing. But, you know, and so, but I just think that we really have to get all on board, because this is it. This is crunch time.
Yeah.
Because if we lose this election, we lose this democracy. Mm-hmm. And that's not hyperbole. That's just the plain truth.
Yeah.
And I think every one of your listeners knows that.
Of course they do. Yeah.
And but I think that really what's important is I really want to get them ginned up to go and say, okay, yeah, she's right. I'm going to do something. I don't fucking feel like it, but I'm going to do it anyway. Because I tell you, I don't feel like writing those postcards, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Because I don't want, I will not live in a fascist country. I will not.
And you know, I mean, if you need
it in my power to keep this country, this country.
Yeah.
Because it really is. I grew up with my mom was a first generation American, just like our future president, mm-hmm. Kamala Harris. She's a first generation American, and she always grew up. I always grew up with her talking about what a great country this is, and it's a melting pot, mm-hmm. and we are, and that's what makes us so great, because people here are people from everywhere.
And if you need inspiration, this is making me and a lot of people angry. But last night, I mean, it was so beautiful because Tim Walz came out and he told his family, you know, you are my world and I love you. And his 17-year-old son was like crying tears of joy and said, that's my dad. And it's like, oh, my God, the whole, like all of us, except for the right, because the right
is going after
him.
Ann Coulter.
Yeah. She deleted her tweet. She said he was weird, but she deleted it.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah.
I saw it. I mean, and you know, and they all pile on.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because you and I were talking earlier, and I was saying, you know, they all say leave Barry alone,
right.
But they don't have a problem tearing Chelsea Clinton down. They didn't have a problem with the Obama girls. They, you know, but you got to leave Barry alone. And it's like, please, you know. And then they pile on this kid with a disability. It's like, what is wrong with them?
And we did leave Barron alone. He's 18, Yeah, so he's 18. He's an adult. And if he, you know, decides to talk about politics or be political in any way, no, he's not off the table. But it's just, it's disgusting what's happening. And I think that, I mean, it's so obvious ever since Kamala became the nominee, the difference now, the perception of what this race looks like, it's this young, fun, happy, but strict prosecutor against this old, grifting, lying piece of shit man. Okay, I'm going to read you.
Who whines all the time.
Yeah, and I'm going to read you that this is an actual quote. Okay, this is an actual quote of what he said yesterday in a press conference. How disgusted we're all when we see all of us are when we see 3 days ago when we viewed their parade. That's an actual fucking Donald Trump quote. And so, you know,
why am I not surprised?
And of course, are you going to hear Jake Tapper or Katie Turr or any of these people talking about if Joe Biden had said that? Oh, my God. But, you know, they're not going to see me.
Across the kind of the New York Times, the Washington Post.
Everything.
All of it.
Yeah.
It's
ridiculous.
Well, you know, Earl Stevens, I know you have him
on. Yes.
And he is
Earl of enough.
I mean, he is going after, because, you know, the guy's been a newspaper man.
Yeah.
And he has just been going after the media like a dog with a bone.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, it's like every time I see one of his things that he publishes on Substack, and I just, I get so excited. I mean, sometimes I just stand up and I'm going, yeah, Earl. Because it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. And I had done I sent out a tweet the other day or something, I don't know, but it was like, I think I read something in the Washington Post or one of the other publications, and they were, you know, they actually called it a horse race.
Yeah.
And this is not a horse race. This is our democracy.
Yeah.
It's not a sporting event. Everything is on the line. And all they're interested in is clicks and subscribers.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, why don't you tell the truth? They engage in a lot of both sides, and
mm-hmm.
it's such bullshit.
It's such bullshit.
I personally, I think one of the best sources for information is The Guardian,
mm-hmm.
because they just report things.
Yeah, there's
they
also...
They don't put these ridiculous headlines out that are misleading.
Yeah.
And I just...
Well, there's The Guardian, there's Philadelphia Inquirer, Boston Globe. I think there's, you know... NPR, unfortunately, was purchased by a right-winger. So some of the...
Yes,
you know,
I know.
When it comes to the corporate media, I think... You know, there's always going to be, like, for instance, the guy who owns MSNBC donated to Donald Trump, but Lawrence O'Donnell is on MSNBC, and I will always bow to and love Lawrence for as long as I live. I love him so much. And so, you know, I mean, there's other people. Chris Hayes has lost me now, but I do like Joy Reid, and, you know, I absolutely love Katie Fang. So there's good people, whether it's at the Times or Washington Post. But unfortunately, I mean, there's Carol Lennig, who I just think is amazing, and she's with the Washington Post. So, I mean, there's always – and there's Jim Acosta with CNN, who I really like. There's – you know, but Jake Tapper I think is completely worthless. So it'll just – you know, unfortunately, we have to – I want to just add this. I saw that – you know, I work for Allison Gill, Mueller, she wrote. I do her social media, and she was just on MSNBC. And – you know, she's unlike me. She doesn't tell everybody to fuck off. So they invited her to come on. Like, I don't care about going on MSNBC. I don't really want to. So I don't have a problem telling everybody that I think are assholes to fuck off. And I've told Chris Hayes to fuck off. I've told Jake Tapper many times to fuck off. Also Katie Turr. So I really don't think...
I can't imagine where you get that from.
I don't imagine MSNBC will be calling me anytime soon. But it was nice to see that they had Allison on because she did a fucking fantastic job. But, you know, she was criticizing the media, obviously, in a much more mature way than I was. But I think that that was something that they saw that, you know, independent media, because Allison is talking about independent media as opposed to corporate media. That's where you get, that's where people need to get their news, because unfortunately the corporate media is failing us. But then they had her on. So I thought, okay, this is interesting. Let's see where this goes. I mean, they're not, it's not like all of a sudden they're doing a good job. But I think maybe slowly over time, if we're loud enough, because I view myself, since I'm not interested in going on MSNBC, I don't care if people are offended by my language or my profanity. I've always been, as you know, I have always been the person who will scream and yell. I mean, I'm just going to quickly say that I had this friend. She got divorced and she had four kids that she was raising, and she didn't have any money. And you said to me, because she was religious, and you said to me, you know, maybe her church could help her. And so I passed the information on to her, and she's like, yeah, well, they told me no. And I'm like, give me the guy's number. So I called up her pastor, and I mean, I just let go. I mean, I was very polite. I didn't use profanity or anything like that, because I knew if I did, he would just hang up on me. But I shamed the fuck out of him. It didn't work because he didn't help her. But it was like, seriously, she gives you money all the time. She's constantly giving you money. And now she needs just a little bit of help for a very short period of time. And your whole thing is like, screw you. That was basically, you know, what happened. So anyway, I've always kind of wanted to scream and yell for whether it's myself or people who... You know, for other people, whether they can or can't, I want to join in or I want to scream for them. And so, you know, I'm one of those people who I'm just going to say the crude thing because I can. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there like Bob is certainly not as crude as I am. And neither is Allison. And so, you know, but it's good to see, like, I'm hoping that the corporate media, and I don't know if they will, but I'm hoping that they, you know, they're bleeding advertisers. I mean, I'm sorry, they're bleeding viewers. And I just hope that that is going to translate into, you know, to a better kind of news situation, because our situation with the news right now is not so good. But I have one more question for you, and it's not the fun question, but I just want to see what you have to say, because oftentimes you're the one, you will tell me you're afraid, but you can kind of talk me down. So what? How concerned are you about the election identifiers not who are going to refuse to certify the election?
Well, you know, I was very concerned, but then I was watching Maddow, and she interviewed, I don't know who she interviewed, it was somebody, you know, I mean, you watch so much you can't remember, but, and they brought me off the ledge, because it was my, it's been one of my big fears as well.
Yeah.
Well, basically, Mark Elias, okay, he, you know, he has Democracy Docket, I think, and he goes after these people, and he's won. there are laws. These people are bound by law, and this is in all states. This is their job. Their job is not to alter the results of the election. It is just to certify the results of the election. These votes have already been counted. They've been tallied. They've been, you know, and then they're sent there just for the stamp of approval. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's what they do. They put their stamp of approval on it. They don't get to have an opinion. So, and if they do, there are actually legal consequences for them. And so I know they're going to do it. They're going to do it.
Yeah.
They're going to try, but they're not going to succeed. I mean, we may have to, you know, we may have to go through, you know, what we went through the last time.
Yeah.
There were, you know, I mean, it was, I think there were 61 lawsuits that Trump filed. He won one, which was a really minor little kind of a thing. The rest of them, most of them in front of Trump appointed judges, were just thrown out of court.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even get a hearing because it was like, this is ridiculous and frivolous, and we all know that you're a fucking liar. So get the hell out of our courtroom.
Yeah.
Was basically, and that is, I mean, we are going to have some nasty stuff going on, and anybody who thinks, just, you know, we all thought we elected Joe Biden that, oh,
yeah,
this nightmare is over. Little did we know,
right,
okay, that it was far from over, that it was really just beginning, that this person who tried to overthrow the government he swore to protect committed all these crimes right in front of our faces.
Yeah.
And then turns around and says that he didn't do it. Now he decides he's going to run for president again. And we've had, I mean, ever since he came down that damn escalator, all right, in 2015,
mm-hmm,
things have been just awful,
yeah,
in this country.
Yeah, fucking nightmare.
Awful. Because what he did was he awakened the worst,
mm-hmm,
in a certain segment of the population.
Mm-hmm.
Just the worst. All of us, I don't care who we are. We, you know, liberal, middle of the road, right wing, okay? All of us have prejudices.
Mm-hmm.
They're inbuilt prejudices, and, you know, and the people who recognize that they have a prejudice, we fight against those prejudices, but some people embrace them,
mm-hmm,
because they're unhappy with certain aspects of their life and they need somewhere to place blame.
Yeah.
And when I was in college and taking a psych course, the professor that I had, one thing she said always stuck with me. There are two kinds of people in this world: people who take responsibility and people who lay blame. Donald Trump,
mm-hmm,
and his followers are the people who lay blame.
Yeah.
They never look to themselves when things go wrong to see, what could I have done differently?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why did this happen? And examine it. I mean, some things come just out of the blue. Some things there's nothing you can do. But a lot of the stuff, you make it happen yourself by the things that you do. And you have to own your mistakes. You have to own up to your mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like I wrote your dad. He worked for ABC News, and he worked on the McCain campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he had so much respect for John McCain, and one of the reasons was McCain had this bus that traveled the country when he was, you know, when he was running for president. And he was also part of, I think it was the Keating Seven or something like that. Anyway, it was a big freaking scandal, and everybody was running away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And McCain had been part of it. They were all running away, and they were all making excuses, except for John McCain. He owned it. He said, I did it. I shouldn't have. It was wrong.
Yeah.
That means something.
It does.
You know, and that's just it. It's just Donald Trump, he would strangle on those words. He can't get them out of his mouth, and neither can his diehard followers.
Yeah.
And they'll believe two opposite things at the same time. I mean, I don't know how you shake it loose. I don't know how you shake it loose to people like that, and maybe you never will.
Yeah.
But I think what we can do is we can just make them, you know, crawl back into their little dark hiding places.
Yeah, and I think the way we, aside from voting, because like Bob has always asked, you know, how do we, you know, get rid of Trumpism? And I don't think we're ever going to get rid of it completely, because it's going to be, there's always going to be bigotry, racism, and sexism. It's always going to be there.
Yeah.
But one of the things, I mean, the fact that Tim Walz, now he wasn't the first person to refer to MAGA as weird, but it was the first time that it stuck, and it's very clear that MAGA doesn't like it, and so this is working, shunning and shaming. Now they don't always feel shame, but they always hate being mocked, and so it's like, if we can make them feel like idiots, and we know it's working because now they're calling us weird. And you know, it's like that. There's a nanny nanny boo boo crowd is just they're losing their fucking spadoinkle because they just don't even know how to deal with this new way of the new Democratic messaging is fucking awesome, and we just have to stick with this and constantly be on the offense. But yes, we have to shun them and make them feel stupid and make them feel like if they're going to come out there with their misogyny, bigotry, and all of that, that we are going to make them feel uncomfortable and embarrass them. And I think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, well, you know, it reminds me of a line in that I have in my in my most recent book, The Adepts. And it's about this character who is the bad guy. And it was, he could dish it out, but he never had it served to him.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. Yeah. They can dish it out,
right.
But boy, they can't take it when you serve it right back to them.
Oh, they squeal, they get so angry. Yeah, it's so evident.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it just, again, watching them going after Tim Walz's son, after they always go after Democratic, you know, children of whoever, they can't take it. But, you know, whatever. I think overall, as long as we do what you said, you know, the one extra thing, and as long as we all show up and vote, I think we're going to see a landslide, and I just want to keep this momentum of joy going. So that's how we're going to end today's show, is just keeping that momentum of joy going. And congratulations on, this is such a great book, so I highly recommend the series. It's a really, and now, I mean, when the first book came out, it was during the fucking pandemic. So I know that there were some people afraid to read it because it was like, oh my God, I don't want to read about a pandemic while we're going through a pandemic. Now we're never going to be rid of COVID, but we're out of the worst part of it, and we're heading hopefully into a really new kind of a time where, you know, it's never going to be easy. We're always going to be dealing with the right and all of that. But if we can get past this and we can come out on the other side with Harris Walz and a blue Congress, blue Senate, blue, there's so much to be hopeful about. So
I know,
you know, I mean, let's just,
well,
let's go with that.
I know you're ending it, but I'm going to end it with this. All I can think of is the Leonard Cohen album, The Future, and the song on it,
right.
Democracy.
Yes.
Democracy is coming
to
the USA.
Woohoo! And you should listen to that because it's totally fucking fun. I love that song. I've been listening to it a lot.
I do too. And actually, when we hang up, I'm going to put it on.
Okay, so before I let you go, tell everybody, now I do have your links and all of that in the Patreon description of the show. I also have the Amazon account linked, but just refresh everybody, where do they find you?
Okay, well, the best place to find me is at BookBub. That's BOOKBUB.com. And then you can just go /Ann Werner. All right. Or just go to BookBub and just when the little, you know, the little magnifying glass.
Yeah,
icon,
search tool. Yeah.
Just put in my name, and it'll take you right to my page, and it'll have all my books under there, and also it'll have books that I have read that I liked and would recommend. So
awesome. Well, then you're also on Twitter as Ms. Werner, and then
Ms. Werner,
Werner.
I'm Ann Werner on Facebook, and I think and I'm Ann Werner on Threads.
Yeah, you're everywhere now.
You
finally come over to Threads, which I'm sure we're going to hate soon enough, but you're finally there now. But yes, awesome. So like I said, I have all those links in the Patreon description. So, Ann, Mom, it was great talking to you.
Well, Kimberly, daughter, it's always great talking to you.
All right. I'm sure I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.